Welcome to In the Middle. I'm Joey Block. Obviously, Ukraine is just dominating the news cycle right now. There's a lot to talk about, so let's get right in the middle of it. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky gave a speech before Congress this week. It was obviously virtual since Ukraine's in the middle of a war right now. It's not the normal procedure where the foreign dignitaries come to Congress and give a formal address, so it was kind of a formal yet informal type of thing. Basically, he was trying to advocate for his country and the needs that he needs. So one thing, it was a big hot button, was a no-fly zone. So Zelensky's really been pushing for this no-fly zone in order to keep Russian planes out of its airspace. And he wants NATO and the U.S. to enforce this. However, the United States government has been very reluctant to get behind that because the theory is if they were to implement such a thing, that Russia would then try and test it. And then in order to enforce, you have to shoot the planes down, which many military experts and U.S. leaders fear could lead to the next world war, henceforth World War III. And they don't really want to do that. So they're trying to stay away from it. There are some members of Congress out there and politicians who are advocating on behalf of Zelensky for the no-fly zone, but right now it seems like there's not going to be much movement on that. But Zelensky brought up several times, even referenced Pearl Harbor and 9/11 in order to kind of put more of a personal feel on this for the U.S. As you may recall, both of those attacks were done through the air. So bombings of Pearl Harbor, and then the terrorists used two airplanes to take down the Twin Towers, as well as go to the Pentagon. And then there was the plane that went down in Pennsylvania, where we don't really know where it quite went. We were thinking White House, Capitol Building, but there's still some spotty reporting on that. But hence being is that Zelensky was trying to bring it home for Americans. This was a speech geared towards American audiences. It wasn't something of all the world, because as you know, Zelensky's been doing the grand tour. He went and spoke before the Canadian Parliament. He also spoke in front of German leaders as well. So Zelensky's really doing the tour, trying to make the case for his country and trying to get as much aid and resources as possible. And many people are comparing him to Winston Churchill, who was the Prime Minister of Britain during the Second World War. And Churchill was very essential in getting Europe and the Western world involved in it, because before Churchill, really, he came and spoke in person in front of Congress back in 1941 when Pearl Harbor was bombed. He was the guy who essentially came in and essentially started to convince the U.S. you need to get involved in this. This was right around the Pearl Harbor bombing when he came through. He was trying to get resources because, as you may know from your history books, the U.S. started out more as a military supplier. This is how we got out of the Great Depression, was selling military weapons to countries in Europe to fight World War II. Because the war started in 1939. We didn't get involved until 1941 when the bombing happened to Pearl Harbor. And Churchill was trying to convince the U.S. they need to get involved for their military interests as well as for the sake of the world. That if the U.S. and the world would cease to exist. And they need all the countries as possible to join the Allies against the Axis powers, which were Japan and Germany, and for a time Italy, and then they switched over halfway through. So with that in mind, Zelensky's getting this comparison as that he is essentially trying to gain the support of the free world and lead Ukraine through a crisis that it's never seen before. Now, some people are skeptical of this comparison. We should hold the phone because of the past corruption that we've seen in the country of Ukraine under President Zelensky. So it depends on which side of the aisle you're looking at, or what, quite frankly, your views are on Zelensky, on whether you think he's the next Winston Churchill or not. But regardless, he definitely is going to be making this effort and is really pushing for it. He's definitely not backing down quickly, like the, for example, the withdrawal from Afghanistan, where the Afghan president just fled out of there as fast as he could. This is not what we're seeing with Zelensky at all. The Ukrainians, as we've been seeing, they are clearly not giving up at all. And another big part that Zelensky asked for was, of course, financial aid. And they wanted more of it. The U.S. already sent some over there, but Zelensky's saying we need more money, more weapons, more everything. So in response to that, President Biden announced an additional $800 million in aid to Ukraine. Now, this will go towards security assistance and includes weapons to take down Russian planes and tanks. He's also giving them 800 anti-aircraft systems, as well as supplying 9,000 anti-armor systems, drones, and 7,000 small arms, which include handguns, grenades, type weapons like that. That's what they're giving out. So the Biden administration, obviously Zelensky, you could say, an argument can be made that he made an impact and that Biden listened to him, heard the appeal, and said, okay, we're going to do this. You could also look at it another way, where the Biden administration planned on doing this anyways, and they either A, left the appearance open that it made it look like Zelensky did something, or B, this just happened to be the right time. This is just when they got all their ducks in a row, and they just decided to give it out from there. But here's still the sticking point, and this is something Zelensky wants and some member of Congress also want. Biden is still resisting sending MiGs over there. And a big reason why is because they're afraid to look like they're too involved militarily. They're trying to take baby steps, the Biden administration, with this. Especially, you have to look at this from a political lens as well. The Biden administration is not being seen very favorably by a lot of people in this country. They're down on practically everything. Although he's received praise for Ukraine, reality is it hasn't really made much of a dent in his approval rating by any sense of the word. Now, also, in regards to Ukraine, it's a reminder of what happened in 2014. And who was in charge in 2014? Well, his old boss, President Barack Obama, and of course, as vice president, it was Joe Biden. So obviously, they made some missteps there, and we saw Crimea go to Russia and never came back as they annexed the country there through, obviously, force and also a referendum, which people question how legitimate the results were, where 90% of the people said that they wanted to join Russia, and then Russia took over from there. And ever since then, it's been a debate of whether it's part of Ukraine, whether it's part of Russia, who's acknowledging, who's not. And the Biden administration is trying to not want to have a repeat of that, and two, also stay away from the big topic of World War III, because essentially, if they're seen getting involved a little too militarily, Putin's going to get a little offended and it's going to clash and start to see this as a direct conflict between the United States and Russia, and the possibility of nuclear war is also looming as well. So the Biden administration's, they're trying to walk that fine line here. And if you're Biden, you want to communicate this one to the American people as best you can, but also can kind of keep a closed lips, because you don't want to give the enemy your strategy. You don't want to announce everything, right? So you gotta play the politics while also playing the president at the same time. And this is not the only thing that's going on in Washington now in regards to this. The House has overwhelmingly voted to revoke normalizing trade relations with Russia. So they're revoking normal trade relations with Russia. It's done. It's not happening anymore in this country. The House voted on this. This vote came down 424-8. So if you've ever followed politics in this country over the last 10 to 20 years, not that many things are bipartisan anymore, right? You don't really see a movement for that in this country. Well, this looked pretty bipartisan. There were only 8 no votes. And all the 8 no votes were Republicans. They were Andy Biggs of Arizona, Dan Bishop of North Carolina, Lauren Boebert of Colorado, Matt Gaetz of Florida, Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, Gran Grothman of Wisconsin, Thomas Massie of Kentucky, and Chip Roy of Texas. Now, there's an argument that can be made for why these people vote against it. Well, if you ask them, they probably say they don't want to poke the bear. They want to try and go more a diplomatic, peaceful route with Putin, which is a point that was argued during Trump's time in office, and some have criticized the GOP of being Putin sympathizers for having that role of philosophies. Also, a more libertarian front of this is that a lot of them believe that America shouldn't be getting involved with these foreign conflicts. It's not really their responsibility. They need to stay out of these countries and, quite frankly, not give any money or any resources or anything and be, quote-unquote, America first, meaning that let's take care of all our problems here at home first and then maybe send some resources out to foreign countries. And that's a maybe, depending on which one of these members you ask, because some of them may say, no, this is a hot potato nobody wants to touch. Now, the measure does head towards the Senate, where we've heard Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer say he's working to get this done fast, as best as he can, so that President Biden can sign this into law and that these new trade relations can be put in place. This all comes after Biden announced last week that he will basically attempt to remove the most favored nation status for Russia. And this is also an announcement that came out with the EU and a lot of other G7 members, where they're basically done doing normal trade relations with Russia, that they now have to find that Russia basically has to either shape up or get out in that sense. And they have to figure out how to do that, more likely pressure Russia into not furthering its invasion into Ukraine. And again, there's a lot of sanctions on Russia already now, so this could come down and hurt them potentially more in the long run of things. And that's as devastating as this may sound for Russia, and that things are heating up here, it's not all super negative, because a 15-point peace deal is in the works right now. It's being seriously considered by both sides, according to multiple reports out there. Some aspects of the deal include Ukraine never joining NATO and Russian troop withdrawal from the country altogether. Now, if you've been paying attention to Ukrainian politics, or basically, if you've just been paying attention to the last couple of weeks here, the big sticking point here, this is why Vladimir Putin got all up in arms about Ukraine being defended by the West, is because NATO. They didn't want Ukraine to join NATO. They haven't for a long time. And in fact, in order to do it, Zelensky would essentially have to try and amend the country's constitution in order to make it happen. Because right now, the way their laws are written, they can't really join these international agreements. So they basically want Ukraine to become another Switzerland, where they're more neutral, that they're not taking sides, and they're doing their own thing. Because Putin doesn't want that at his border. He's already got Poland, which is pretty close to him. They're a NATO member. He doesn't want people to keep joining NATO because it gives the West a little more power than he'd like. So that's a part of the deal. And Zelensky has even hinted at the fact that he would give that concession to him, which has me heard in the past, there were rumors that Zelensky would be trying to join NATO and that there was a process going on. But as of right now, if this deal goes through, that will not happen. But in his speech to Congress, Zelensky has hinted at maybe another type of agreement that didn't involve NATO or the United Nations, because Russia has a lot of power on the United Nations. They basically veto anything because they are a permanent member of the National Security Council there. So, but Zelensky was basically saying, oh, well, maybe it's time for another international agreement. But also some people argue with this, the way the deal is being set up, that they wouldn't be able to do that as well. But again, this is also on Russia's side. They can't have any troops anymore. They got to take their troops out of the country. They have to withdraw them. And as a result, this would create a ceasefire that could essentially end the war here. Now, a sticking point to the deal is the status of Ukrainian territories taken by Russian forces in 2014. So this includes Crimea, right? Because Ukraine really wants that back. But Russia doesn't want to give it back. And if they have to take a neutral status, they want everything back. But Russia wants, they want Ukraine. Well, they actually want the whole country, but based on the deal, you wouldn't get that. But he wants Crimea. He wants the Donbass region. He wants the other Russian separatist region. He basically wants the areas that want to be a part of Russia. And he also, he probably does want those little slivers. He wants that southern end as well. That's a little north of Crimea. He wants that because the Russians do have a lot of control there. But the deal, as of right now, of course, it is a revolving thing, and after recording this podcast, it could be something entirely different. So I highly recommend you check your sources on that one, that it's not going to be they are getting every single thing that they've taken over at this point. That there would be a withdrawal, and then Ukraine would rebuild whatever they have at this point, and they would go from there as best as they can. And you'd have to see whether there's going to be more aid involved in that and how everything's going to play out. Now, here's what we're getting in the middle of this week. Republicans are looking to ride the momentum of last year's elections into November's midterms, particularly right here in New Jersey. The GOP is looking to compete in places it hasn't in decades. One of them is the 6th Congressional District, which is home to the swing town of Sayreville. Last year, Republicans did well and garnered 2 seats on the borough council. The top vote getter? Well, he only got in the race a few weeks before. Joining me now to discuss is someone who's been on the show quite a bit. You've probably heard his voice. You're probably familiar with him. Is Sayreville Republican Borough Councilman Christian Anoha. Christian, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, Mr. Joey, sir, it's an honor. You got a lot going on, too. So congratulations to you. Congratulations on, you know, your new platform with, Fox Sports Radio and your podcast coming up.
Thank you. And obviously, you have some big news for yourself. Since the last time I've spoken to you, obviously, you were running for, I believe it was state senate at the time. And then I was looking around and I saw after the November elections that you ran for Sayreville Borough Council, so you're now a member of the Sayreville Borough Council. You've been on it now for a couple months. What have you been working on since you've joined?
Yes, sir. You know, I did run for Borough Council after the congressional run. In NJ's New Jersey's sixth congressional district. We had the opportunity to serve in Sayreville's Republican committee as a recruitment chair, and quite frankly, it was tough to recruit candidates after January 6th, to be honest with you. But there were still core values, with the party on paper, that I genuinely believe that I could still embody and be a flag bearer of. So I decided to kind of step up and run myself, within our local borough and continue the conversation with our residents. And I'm really glad that, we were able to get a win and, be in a position to really reflect our, the residents' views But to answer your question directly, you know, I am serving as the first liaison in the planning and zoning committee. And, you know, of course, many other subcommittees, but primarily planning and zoning is what I've mostly been busy with beyond other, you know, official borough duties.
Now, in November, you were elected to a 3-year term. So obviously, you still have a lot of stuff ahead of you, a big road ahead of you. What do you plan on doing over the next couple of years when you're on the council?
You know, while running, I had the opportunity to talk to many residents. And I was, you know, obviously this was still within the pandemic. And, you know, many of the residents, especially within my, you know, within our borough, are our parents, right? They have a lot of concerns for their children and their children's lifestyle, right? So, you know, hopefully, I really, really hope that we can develop, you know, a community center of some sort, or an arcade center of some sort, just a place where, you know, children can still go outside and develop themselves from a social standpoint, from a recreational standpoint. And we have a lot of development going on within our borough, within our community. So, you know, within a 3-year space, I'm looking forward to that, if anything.
And you were on the recreational board before this. Are you still going to be involved with that a lot?
I was. You know, I'm not on it now. You know, in an official capacity, but I still have a great relationship. In Sayreville, we recently, our recreation director last year, our former director actually passed away. So, you know, rest in peace to him. And we recently hired a new recreation director, and I'm looking forward to really building my relationship with them. I have so far, but I'm not the first liaison to that committee. So my relationship with them is really more in an unofficial capacity, but still a great relationship nonetheless from my previous days as a board member within Sayreville's Recreation Advisory.
Now, as you know, in politics, it seems to be like you're going after one election after the next. Now, we're done with last year's elections,
yeah,
but now we have this year's elections, and you kind of have a personal connection, which I want to go into. So New Jersey's 6th Congressional District is seeing an increased amount of interest among Republican candidates. You ran in this district 2 years ago. What's your assessment of the GOP's chances of winning in this district?
You know what? Overall, this is my personal assessment as a resident. You know, I think that we have a lot of great candidates, particularly in, I think, Sue Kiley and Rick Maida. I know there are definitely more candidates as well, but I think those are the top two to really take a look at, and more particularly Sue Kiley, actually. You know, when you consider a candidate that is a former mayor and a, you know, current county commissioner, and one that has a track record of winning elections, you know, that's going to be very necessary going against Frank Pallone, because he also has a track record of winning elections. So I think that's what it would definitely boil down to, you know, who has the expertise in our modern times on how to win and really connect to voters. So, you know, we're going to find out in November, assuming that, you know, Sue wins in the primaries from the GOP side. And, of course, assuming Frank wins in his primary. But I think that's, a safe bet for both sides, according to my perspective.
Now, there's not too many elected officials in Middlesex County who are Republicans. Being that you are one, candidates may see you as someone who they may want on your side. Now, it sounds like you're more in Sue Kiley's corner. Is she going to be the person you're endorsing?
I haven't gone on the record to endorse anyone, but in terms of just my assessment, I think that for, you know, again, Frank Pallone has been winning races since before I was born, you know, and that's something to really, really consider, you know. And if someone is going to take the time to develop a strategy and a playbook to beat him, I would presume that they have a history of winning. You know, and that's I think that's just something to really consider. When I ran 2 years ago, many people don't know that my initial campaign was developed through the, you know, as a write-in candidate, and I was also, you know, a candidate through, you know, bylaw committees. You know, through the bylaws, have the opportunity to make a pitch to the GOP convention delegates over in Monmouth County, which I won at about probably 80 or 90%, and then eventually in Middlesex County. But I haven't really developed the campaign by then. I think many would argue that it was just more of a learning experience for me specifically. But in this race this year, I think it's a bit different. You know, we have more experienced candidates coming to the table. So Rick Maeda is definitely worth being mentioned because he had a great, in my opinion, a great run against Cory Booker, you know, Senator Cory Booker, rather. And I think he had probably the most votes of any Republican at the statewide level, you know, during that time. So, you know, it's definitely worth mentioning. But nonetheless, when you consider someone with a track record of winning, you know, it's hard to go against. It's hard to predict against. So that's really more of what I'm saying. In terms of an endorsement, I don't know either one enough. I'm still getting to know them just like other residents as well.
Now, I have to ask you, because I specifically want to focus on Middlesex County now. That convention is coming up on Saturday, but the screening committee has already vetted the candidates, and they're going with Sue Kiely. Now, that's not for sure that Sue Kiely is going to get the convention vote and that she's going to get the organizational line. But a lot of people what I'm hearing and what I'm reading is that it's a very good sign for Sue Kiely. Is it your assessment that we can expect to get Sue Kiely as the Middlesex County Republican organizational choice?
You know, I would expect it too, but you know, funny enough, I'm not even voting at that convention. I'm not a voting delegate at the Middlesex County level. Within the GOP for this year's coming convention. So, you know, it will really be up to the delegates who are going to vote. But regardless of who wins, you know, you got to prove it in the primaries during June, you know. Most of what these conventions just show is the recommendation according to the party. But, you know, in this day and age, that's not a guarantee. You know, I look at my race as an example as well. You know, upsets do happen, you know, and if anyone could pull it off, you know, it wouldn't shock me, you know, for someone of the caliber of Rick Maeda, because he is not as new as many people would expect. So, you know, the point is that you never really know, quite frankly, Joe. But it is a good sign to answer your question for Sue Kiely, because she has proven to be really popular over in Monmouth County, especially her, you know, reelection as the county commissioner, you know, winning, I think, probably at almost 60 or maybe even over 70%. And to show that the popularity has extended over to Middlesex County, at least Middlesex County executive committees, you know, it's a good sign. It's a good sign for sure. And if you want to beat Frank Pallone, you know, it starts off by winning your primary.
Now, there's four candidates running in this field. Out of all of them, since right now we know Sue Kiely's got the Monmouth County organizational line, that's already been decided. It wasn't really a surprise here. You're basically saying it could be a toss-up between Rick Maeda or Sue Kiely. You know, you're saying more Sue Kiely, but Rick Maeda could still end up winning this organizational line on Saturday?
No, actually, I know at the convention level, probably not. But I'm referring more to the primary. You know what I mean? You know, it's not always about the organizational line. You know. It's really the primary goal is to win your primary. Sorry, the primary goal is to win your primary, right? You want to have more votes than any other candidate in June, you know, regardless of who gets the organizational line. So, you know, Rick Maeda, I think he's used to being an underdog. So my reference to it for it being a toss-up is pertaining to June. If he stays in the race, I think if anyone could pull it off, it may be him because he's run statewide. And to put that effort now into, you know, two counties, you know, that seems to be more doable. And that's really more of what I'm saying. But nonetheless, the signs are leaning towards Sue Kiely. She has a lot of momentum that is building and developing. So, we'll definitely see in June. But pertaining to the convention itself, I think that Sue Kiely is the clear front runner here. I don't see it as a toss-up at all. Pertaining to the convention, though.
We've been talking a lot about June, but I want to do a flash forward to November. You won last year in a swing town located in the district. These are going to be the type of places Republicans need in order to get them over the line in November. This district is heavily Democratic, but there are some pockets, and you happen to be in one of those pockets, and you were able to succeed as a Republican candidate. So what should the nominee be running on? What should the message be?
You know, as you mentioned, these are swing towns. Sometimes towns differ. Municipalities do differ. Because I'm not running, I haven't necessarily checked the whole landscape in this, you know, in this year. But from my experience running in years past, you know, there was a lot of concern as to what we're experiencing today, right? Many people had predicted, you know, inflation. Many people had predicted just the instability that we are seeing in our country, right? And just the lack of a clear, bright future. You know, and overall, just how we handle ourselves as a country in the foreign landscape, from a national landscape, and even at the state level. We're just, sometimes our residents don't necessarily feel as though our typical New Jersey values, right, is really being portrayed in Washington, D.C. So, you know, for our candidates, to really win within, you know, come November, as you mentioned, I think it's just coming across as your everyday New Jerseyan better than Frank Pallone has been doing for the past 30 years. And in my humble opinion, I don't think that should be too difficult for any of the Republican candidates. I think that we saw a good sign of that last year at the local levels. But, you know, our candidates are going to have to step up and show that at the county levels or the inter-county levels pertaining to CD6.
Now, in terms of the type of campaigning, you've obviously run a pretty grassroots campaign because you started out as a write-in candidate and then you were able to appeal to the delegates at the GOP conventions. You were able to get yourself as the nominee, even though you were a write-in. So you obviously know how this goes. What's the best mode of campaigning in these places, in these towns, in this district altogether? Is it trying to get ad buys on TV? Is it interacting with people face-to-face? Is it social media? What should be the game plan for the Republican nominee?
Joey, I don't know. If I knew, I would be running, I promise you. Here's what I'd say. You know, believe it or not, I'm really a serial Republican, right? And what I mean by that is, you know, my coming into politics was under the regime of you know, our former mayor, Kennedy O'Brien. You know, longtime Republican mayor in a largely Democratic town, in a largely Democratic county, in a largely Democratic state. You know, and one thing that, you know, from my relationship with him, you know, in my young life in politics so far, was from the retail standpoint. So, and what I mean by retail is just one-on-one interactions, you know, and if you can keep building that in due time, it will have a compound effect. So that's been my personal blueprint. I'm really glad that it seems as though it paid off in the, you know, in the local race that I recently won. I now have the privilege to serve at a local level. But so apply that same blueprint, you know, at a legislative district level or at a congressional district level, I don't think is the main game plan because it didn't work for me, right? I'm looking forward to seeing what, you know, Sue Kiley's agenda is and what Rick Minnis' agenda is and some of the other candidates as well, you know, as they continue to make their case, you know, leading up to June. And then, you know, when we see who the winner is, then I'm sure we'll see the full effect of what they've had planned. But overall, I think that if we did have a clear blueprint, we would have implemented it, and we would have, you know, we would be in this seat right now. But clearly, there isn't a clear defined blueprint on how to beat Frank Pallone just yet, in my opinion. And that's why he's still in office.
Now, this is still the most serious challenge that there has been to incumbent Democratic Congressman Frank Pallone in over a decade. Regardless of who wins this primary, this will be a more serious challenge than we've seen in the past that gets Pallone shaking his boots. And it's something that people have been wondering, like, why are Republicans so interested in running in the 6th district? I mean, what's the obsession here?
I don't think there's the obsession overall. You know, if there was the obsession, we would have had more candidates run 2 years ago. You know, I think there was only two, and neither of us made it to the ballot, right? So I don't think there's obsession. You know, I think in my personal opinion, even this year, you know, four candidates compared to other districts, it's really not too much. You know, I think that in the 7th district, it might be maybe like 5, 6, maybe even 7, right? So four compared to other districts. And when I say four, really, I think it's notably two. Compared to other districts, in fact, really, one can even argue that suitably won, you know, because Sue Kiley is an elected official running. And I think that that holds more weight. So, you know, I wouldn't even go as far as saying that, that there's an obsession, you know. That's just my personal take, if anything.
There does seem to be a lot of interest in it, though, in the past, because a lot of Republicans have written off this district, and you still have names jumping in, like Sue Kiley, for example, an elected official. You have Rick Maida, someone who's run statewide. It seems like, overall, there's still bigger name Republicans that are running this time around. I mean, last time around, it was basically you, and there was one other guy, and that was it, both as write-ins. Now you have, like, four actual campaigns that are getting on the ballot and have large amounts of money behind them.
Yeah. Okay. You know, in terms of a reference to other years, I can understand. I thought you meant a reference to other districts, you know. Okay. But in reference to other years, that, yes, then I guess one can say that there's more of an obsession, you know. But I think that when we look at the candidates individually, I think it's really because they believe that they have strong ties to the district. I really believe that's more of what it is, and not necessarily, you know, Congressman Frank Pallone in a nutshell. That's my personal take. You know, when you look at Sue Kiley, I think that the confidence that she developed after running a great solid re-election campaign last year and seeing the results it turned out, I think that she wants to continue that momentum from Monmouth County into Middlesex County. You know, I don't think it's necessarily an obsession towards Frank Pallone, in all honesty, but just seeing, you know, the joy that the residents have with the work that she's been doing. I think that's really more of what the obsession is as to how can I help serve the residents better, and going off of her track record. I think when it comes to, you know, the former, you know, senatorial candidate in Rick Maida, you know, I think that him seeing his results running against Senator Cory Booker and seeing how, you know, he was able to do numbers beyond many people's expectations, he wants to continue that. And from my understanding, he was born and raised in Middlesex County. He went to university, at Rutgers University, in Middlesex County, right? So, you know, I think that he really believes in his ties to the district, not necessarily Frank Pallone. You know, and hopefully, and I think some of the other candidates that I'm standing weren't always living in the district, but maybe they were born and raised here. And I think that they believe that our residents really appeal to that. And looking for someone, again, who just reflects the everyday New Jersey, but primarily the everyday CD6 values. And I think that the candidates really see themselves reflecting that, you know, this year more than ever, just because of how the landscape in our country is changing.
I want to turn to state politics now. You ran for state assembly in the 19th legislative district back in 2019. The state assembly will be up again for election next year. I got to ask you, are you planning on running?
Don't do that to me, my friend. You know, I'm happy to be a councilman in Sayreville. I'm really, really focusing on, you know, what I'm working on with my residents here. You know, and I'm looking at this campaign cycle. I'm looking forward to helping, you know, candidates that I really believe will be a good fit for our district, for our towns, whether locally or at the state level as well, or even federally. So that's really where I'm at. I'm not really looking further beyond that, in all honesty. But I will say this, you know, Speaker Coughlin, there's a lot of work cut out for him. And I think from his belief, he's doing just that. Assemblywoman Lopez, when I ran against her, she appeared to be a bit new in her role. I think that now she believes that she's growing more comfortable in it. So, you know, these are folks that I may have to work with in some capacity as a councilman, just seeing the nature of how things are, you know, are going for a borough. So, you know, I'm wishing them all the best in terms of their roles in their job. When it comes to campaign time or election time, that becomes a different conversation, but we're just not there yet, I'm afraid, you know? It's not really any personal vendetta against them as individuals. It's more of looking at the results afterwards, and then we can have a clear decision then. You know, that's really how I go about my campaigns. You know, I think many people think I just want to run just to run. But in actuality, my decision to run is really based on the results of who was in that position last and within that election period, specifically just the election period, and not a longer history, quite frankly. So, you know, the LD19 representatives, it have at least a year to really show and prove. Let's just wait for them to show and prove, you know, before we make any decisions.
So you're not even considering it?
We got to look at the results first. You know, if they have good results, then I won't be in the equation. And if I believe that the results can be better, and I believe that I can do a better job at it, then that's now a conversation we can have. But we got to look at the results first, you know. Now, if we want to talk about why I ran in the past, that now is another conversation. But for within this two-year space for them, we got to let them have that two-year space to really show and prove, you know.
Well, you know, I had to ask that question, but I do want to talk more about this district. Republicans have been making headway in this district the past couple elections. Republican gubernatorial nominee Jack Cittarelli only lost this district by 8 points. The assembly race was about the same, and you did better than past candidates when you ran. What's the odds of Republicans winning one or both of these seats come 2023?
It sounds so close, but it really is very far away. You know, quite frankly, when I consider, not to go off topic here, but, you know, when you look at what's happening internationally, you know, there are literally folks, you know, who are in Ukraine living normal, everyday lives, you know, working maybe as doctors, lawyers, you know, just standard everyday lives, and in just a blink of an eye, based on themselves in a bunker on the ground. You know, so to really start thinking about 2023, it really is that far away, my friend, quite frankly. I think that we need to look at it one at a time, one cycle at a time. 2023, it really is that far, man. Like, so many things can change. So it's hard to speak towards that. You know, maybe some of the political strategists out there, you know, since that's their veteran job, I could see them speaking towards it, but for me, that's really not what I'm in it for. You know, I'm not thinking that far in terms of, targeting who I want to run against or anything like that. You know, I'm really just glad to have the privilege of serving locally. And when 2023 comes, we can look at the results and then make a decision from there.
Well, we'll leave it there. Sayreville Borough Republican Councilman Christian Anoha, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend. You know, I really want to encourage everyone, regardless of their viewpoints towards politics, really make a conscious effort, be involved, get out there and vote, make your voice heard, find out if you're registered to vote, pay it forward to make sure that your voice is heard, so we can have the right representation, we can have proper representation, so that decisions that are made concerning us reflect us. Joey, thank you, my friend. Congratulations to you as well. I'm really happy to see you as, you know, a native of our district, someone who is a graduate in our district at a professional level, now doing bigger things within the working class environment. So kudos to you. Keep paying it forward. Thanks for being a great inspiration for our generation, for the millennials. I'm proud of you, man. And, you know, keep on paying it forward, man. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the platform.
Thank you, Christian. It's always a pleasure. Well, that about wraps it up for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me as always. To keep in touch with the show, all you have to do is follow me on social media. You can do it on Twitter at @Block_Joey. Again, my last name is spelled BLOCH_Joey. You can also check me out on Instagram, which is at joey.block.39. Again, that is at joey.block.39. Now, in case you just found this show for the first time, you're like, oh my God, this is so great. I want to keep listening to this week after week after week. Well, here's what you got to do. You got to go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. I'm going to say that again. foxsportsradionewjersey.com. You're going to go to that homepage, and then you're going to find the drop-down menu. You're going to click on that. You're going to go to where it says podcast. You click on that button. And then you're going to scroll down until you see In the Middle with Joey Block. You click on that, and you'll see all the episodes there. The newest one will be at the top, and all the past ones will be at the bottom, which during midterm season, you're definitely going to want to listen to all those episodes, as it'll give you a good sense of all the candidates that are out there. Well, thank you so much for joining me. As always, we'll be back again next week with more In the Middle right here on Fox Sports New Jersey.